Welcome to the Evolved Caveman, where men learn to be successful and happy with your host, Dr. John Schinnerer, as he shares the most impactful ideas and practices for you to get the most from your relationships, your work, and from your life. Now here's Dr. John.
Hello again, and welcome to the latest episode of the Evolved Caveman. This is Dr. John, and today I wanted to talk a little bit about how being raised in the man box culture impacts our relationships down the road. So let me begin with a quick story. It was the second half of the varsity high school soccer game. The game was tied 1-1, and play had just been stopped by the referee. There was an injury timeout, and I was the injury. I was laying on the ground writhing in pain after having just been elbowed in the temple by a guy 5 inches taller and 30 pounds heavier. I was helped off the sideline, and play resumed. While I was still clearing the cobwebs out of my head from the concussion I just received, my coach turned to me and said, "John, man up. We need you out there. Stop being a wuss." So I sucked it up and went back into the game. What else could I do? I was a casualty of the man box culture. So what is the man box culture? Well, if you ask boys in middle school and high school what it means to be a man, you will get remarkably consistent answers. Men yell at people. Men have no emotions. Men stand up for themselves. Men don't cry. Men don't make mistakes. Men know all about sex. Men take care of others. Men are loyal. Men provide for their families. Men push people around. Men can take it. Men are self-reliant. Men don't back down. Men are described by middle school and high school students as aggressive, responsible, mean, tough, angry, successful, strong, in control, active, smart, and dominant over women. Now, you can also see that there's some positive and some negative in there. I don't mean to say that all of masculinity is bad. I do want to say that we want to take a look at it and figure out what is it we want to hold on to moving forward, and what might be negatively impacting us in our relationships in this day and age. So when men step out of the box, when boys step out of the box growing up, we get put back into the box, usually by other men, via physical intimidation or name-calling. Sissy, gay, fag, wimp, pussy, bitch, baby, loser, nerd, girl, wuss, punk, mama's boy, geek, and so on. And men hate being embarrassed. And as a result, when they get mocked and humiliated like this, they jump back into the man box in order to keep from being humiliated. And most of these words really haven't changed since I was a kid 45 years ago. So growing up, when a boy shows too much fear, anxiety, or sadness, someone will say something like, "Stop being such a pussy," or "Man up." And when a boy shows too much joy, love, excitement, or romanticism, someone will say, "Stop being such a fag," or "Don't be a little bitch." And we quickly learn to shut down those emotional parts of ourselves. As a result, we learn that the only safe emotions for us to display publicly are anger, some degree of anger, irritability, frustration, rage, annoyance, or stress, because I can say, "I'm so stressed, look how important I am," or "Look how busy I am, it's a badge of honor." Or lust. "I'd do her, she's hot." But the biggest one is really anger. And everything else we feel gets funneled through these emotional lenses, primarily the lens of anger. And, you know, I talk to a lot of men and they say, "So what? It's always been this way." Well, yes, and things are changing. 50 years ago, a good husband might be described solely as a good provider. After all, marriage originally began largely as a financial arrangement. And if the husband didn't drink too much and wasn't verbally or physically abusive, that was a good husband. Then came the 1970s, the pill, female empowerment, and an increase in women entering into the workforce. As a result, many women started earning their own money, and they needed men less for financial security. Women's expectations for marriage and husbands quickly changed over the next several decades. Now, on top of the need for a financial partnership, women wanted a husband who was a lifelong romantic partner, particularly with the skills of listening, empathy, support, communication, and emotional awareness. At present, the divorce rate hovers around 50%, and wives are initiating divorce 75% of the time. Why is this? Well, the main reason I hear with my clients is that the wives can't connect with their husbands. You see, the job definition of husband changed dramatically over the past 50 years, and nobody bothered to tell the men. What's more, men have not been socialized to have these skills. Not only that, they've been socialized in the exact opposite direction. This situation is not the men's fault. Let me repeat that. It is not our fault. It's not your fault. However, it is our responsibility to adapt, to grow, and to learn, but only if you're looking to be successful and happy in relationship. Okay, so how does this play out in relationship? It's said that masculinity is hard-earned and easily lost. We men work really hard to prove ourselves over and over and over. There's a merciless drive in this man-box culture to achieve and accomplish and win. The problem with this approach is you're only as good as your last accomplishment, and no one can sustain 100% success across a lifetime. When the inevitable failure crosses our path, a deep depression can often follow. And since we as men are not supposed to feel sadness, shame sets in. The belief that we are all bad, that we are less of a man, less of a husband, less of a father. Of course, this is not true, but that doesn't stop us from believing our own inner critic. So what are some of the other lessons that we learn from this man-box culture? And please keep in mind that these are generalities, and they may not apply to all men. We're looking at this as at a cultural level, at a level of averages or group norms. Okay, so because men are socialized not to feel and to be analytical problem solvers, we tend to live in our heads. What's the problem with this? We get cut off from the possibility of being happy. After all, happiness isn't thinking. Happiness is about feeling. If we are disconnected from our emotions, then we are necessarily cut off from our happiness, as well as most other positive emotions. That's a huge problem, and probably the biggest motivator to me to change things. Another one is, because men are largely relegated to anger as a signature emotion, it's easy to blame others for that which is our responsibility, that is, our actions, our thoughts, our feelings. You see, anger cuts us off from growth. It locks us into a fixed mindset in which change is impossible. Because when I'm really angry at you, nothing is my fault. I'm externalizing all blame onto you, and therefore I have no need to change anything in me. And the motto of many men, love me as I am. There is no need for me to change. And I get pushback from men on this all the time. How come I need to evolve? Why don't they evolve? Well, they already evolved. We're playing a little bit of catch-up here in relationship. The other thing is, just consider the metaphor of two bodies of water. Which would you rather be? The healthy river that is teeming with life and has clean water coursing through it and greenery springing up on either side? Or do you want to be the pond that's stagnant, not moving, that has scum and bacteria and moss growing on the top of it with mosquitoes flying all around? Pick one. To me, change is synonymous with life. To me, growth is paramount in this lifetime. When we stop growing, when we stop learning, when we stop evolving, we're a step closer to the grave. All right, another one. Many men lose their male friendships over the years. Thus, there's an epidemic of loneliness among men, loneliness which has been found to be more harmful than smoking or obesity. One in eight adult men say they have no one outside the home with whom they can discuss serious topics. This puts more pressure on the spouse to meet all their social and emotional needs. And this is a direct result, I would argue, of growing up in the man box culture, where we are mocked and humiliated oftentimes for showing sensitivity towards other men, for expressing ourselves at a deep level to other men. Another one. Due to the competitiveness inherent in the man box culture, many men believe their highest values are wealth, fame, power, and/or sex. We're always looking to be better than the guy next to us. We're always looking to prove ourselves by having a nicer car, earning more money, having a better house, having a hotter wife. Yet none of these graces us with happiness and contentment, at least not for long. Now, keep in mind that most relationships don't end due to a large transgression such as an affair. Most relationships end far more subtly and slowly. They end via death by a thousand paper cuts. What are these paper cuts? They are an accumulation of slights, resentments, being ignored, put downs, and misunderstandings. Men's attitude towards the world works in a similar way. As men accumulate hurts, slights, and put-downs, the lens through which they see the world can become hostile, pessimistic, and they can become mistrustful of people and of the world. These are our core beliefs. Recently, I had a male client come into my office and sit down and proclaimed, "All women are bitches." He was single and dating and had become frustrated with the dating process. I asked him how he thought that attitude would serve him in the dating world. And I told him he may as well not be dating if that was his mindset, because with that mindset, he would look for and find the worst in any woman he dated. So be aware that these core beliefs can simply be changed with a decision, but you have to be aware of them first. And just to give you an example, that one belief of all women are bitches could be changed to some women are difficult, some women are dishonest, some women are unstable. But it's definitely not all. That's black or white, all or nothing thinking, and it's just wrong. What's more, the skills men develop to survive in the man box culture, such as one-upmanship, insults, hyper-competitiveness, lack of emotionality, and channeling all other emotions through the anger lens, perfectly prepare us for mastering the four horsemen of the apocalypse. These are John Gottman's four deadly harbingers of divorce. The four horsemen are defensiveness. For example, "It's not my fault. If only you had not done X, I wouldn't be so angry." The second one is stonewalling, and that is shutting down emotionally and withdrawing from a disagreement. The third one is criticism. "Oh, you're so lazy. You never empty the dishwasher." And contempt is the fourth one. And contempt is anger plus a judgment in which one partner knows better than the other. Typically, one partner thinks they're smarter than the other. So in some ways, we're taught growing up to excel at the skills that lead to divorce. Again, this is not our fault. It's simply our responsibility to find new ways of being and communicating. All right, so those are the problems with man box culture. What might work better? What might be a better approach? Well, I just have some kind of random thoughts here, but let me share a few with you. I think that the initial step is having a growth mindset. In other words, believe change is possible through effort and perseverance, and understand that you're going to have, your mindset is context specific. So you might have a growth mindset and believe you can change and improve in some areas, but not others. So as you go throughout your day, just look with curiosity and ask yourself, is this a growth mindset that I have in this area? You know, it could be intelligence, could be weight loss, could be stress, could be pain management. It could be learning particular skills within a relationship. It could be learning to be less defensive when your spouse comes at you with a criticism. But you want to believe change is possible through growth, through effort and perseverance. Because if you don't believe change is possible, guess what? It ain't. Second, I believe that we want to work to balance our head and heart. We want to learn to balance our thought and feeling. Because as men, we're rewarded growing up for being in our head, for being analytical, intellectual, problem-solving. We're not supposed to feel. And yet, we're human, and we do. And the more you can tune into your body and get out of your head to find out what it is you're actually feeling in any given moment, necessarily you're going to be better in relationship. Because part of what women are looking for in this day and age is the ability to be emotionally aware, to be emotionally literate, and to engage in those types of conversations. Again, this is only if you want to be successful and happy in relationship. An extension of that is I think we want to work towards being aware of and comfortable with all of our emotions. Another step towards emotional literacy. I think that you want to be able to feel your anger, yet not act on it. To separate the emotion from the action. So you can be angry or annoyed and yet behave positively as a result of it. So you can learn to speak up assertively and say, hey, you know, I need you to, I don't know, treat me with more respect, or I need you to bring the volume down in how you're talking to me. Not punching a wall because you're out of control with your anger. I think we need to learn to take absolute responsibility for our own actions, words, and emotions, rather than getting locked into anger and projecting blame onto other people for things that are really our responsibility. I think we need to really fight for and know that our worth goes well beyond a single event or achievement, that we have self-worth simply by virtue of the fact of being born and taking breath. And that one could take a few years in and of itself, but it's a really important one, that your worth isn't dependent on how much money you make. It's not dependent on how beautiful your partner is. It's not dependent on what car you drive. It's not dependent on whether or not you are currently gainfully employed. You are worthy simply because you are a human being and you were born, just like everyone else on this planet is worthy because they were born. I think it's a good idea to practice self-compassion, to encourage greater resiliency and equanimity, or evenness of mind, evenness of mood. I think that we want to cultivate that kind inner voice, because we know from research that it serves us better than self-esteem, that it's a different gear to shift into that allows you to be more resilient. It allows you to bounce back from mistakes and difficulties more quickly than if you don't have that voice. Now, I've talked to a lot of men who've been like, well, I need that inner critic to motivate me. That's how I motivate myself, is to yell at myself. Okay, if that's working for you, great. But watch the emotional fallout when you do use that voice, and have another voice to shift into. A lot of this is about psychological flexibility and the ability to shift gears. So there may be times when that inner critic doesn't work for you. I want you to have practiced that inner kindness voice so that you can shift into that, play around with that, experiment. I think that there's a big lesson in knowing that failure is one of the best and most powerful ways that we learn. And so embracing the idea that failure is actually a good thing. I like the idea of fail forward fast, especially in business, because I think so many of us get caught up in not wanting to be embarrassed. Therefore, we don't want to fall down. We don't want to make mistakes. We don't want to fail because we don't want people to judge us harshly, that we begin to stop taking risks and we stop pushing forward and trying. And I think that comfort with failure, even reframing failure as a learning opportunity, is a great way to go. Another one I think is being aware of your shadow side and working to accept and integrate it. Be aware of those dark parts of you that you're pretty much afraid to look at honestly and openly. Is it anger? Is it occasional dishonesty? Is it addiction to sex? Is it an over-reliance on drugs and alcohol? What are those sides of you, those pieces of you that you are ashamed of, that you really are afraid to bring to the light of day because you know others are going to judge you negatively? Those are the pieces that need the self-compassion, that you need to turn to and accept, and then work to gently change. And part of this, I think, is having great curiosity about yourself as a human being and learning to accept all sides of yourself. Which is a nice segue to the next one, which is being curious and accepting of other people in the world, other cultures, other ethnicities, other races. And right now in this world, we need that more than ever, because we are more divided than I've ever seen us. And so I think along with this idea, you want to be aware of your conscious biases against others. You also want to be aware of your unconscious biases, the biases that you're not even consciously aware of, because we all have them. So one of the ways you can be aware of your unconscious biases is to ask yourself, if I'm standing in line at Starbucks or the supermarket, who am I willing to speak to? What strangers am I willing to start a conversation with? And which ones am I least likely or not likely at all to start a conversation with? And it's the answer to that second question that will begin to point you in the direction of your unconscious biases. And then finally, I think we need to be curious and willing and able to learn to become an expert at communicating through difficult and uncomfortable conversations. One of the hallmarks of successful people is that they are willing and able to sit in uncomfortable conversations, and they can stay relatively calm or calm enough to get to the end of the conversation and typically come out with a positive outcome. Now, granted, sometimes you're going to have those uncomfortable conversations, and the only outcome is, well, let's agree to disagree. But it's only through those uncomfortable conversations that we push outside of our fear and we push towards greater growth and understanding. So those are some of my ideas on how we need to evolve. My goal here is really to start a movement of men who are interested in evolving, in learning, in growing beyond how we're socialized, beyond normal. I'm not looking for normal. Normal to me is boring. Normal to me is pedestrian. I'm looking for who wants to evolve beyond normal, to something special, to something, to being successful and happy, and to being successful and happy at work, as parents, and perhaps most importantly, in your main, your primary relationship. So if you're interested in learning some new tools to be successful and happy, I highly suggest you join the Facebook group at The Evolved Caveman, or you can go to theevolvedcaveman.com and sign up for the newsletter, or even consider joining Jory and me for a couples retreat in Costa Rica, September 12th to the 19th, 2020. And you can get more information on that by going to joryrose.com, joryrose.com, and look at retreats and go to the couples retreat for more information. All right, well, thanks for listening. That's it for today. The man box culture and how it impacts our relationships and ultimately negatively impacts our happiness. I hope you've enjoyed it. This is Dr. John signing off. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Evolved Caveman podcast. If you like what you've heard, support us by subscribing, leaving reviews, and sharing the podcast with friends and colleagues. For the latest, most powerful tools to connect with like-minded men, join the Facebook group at The Evolved Caveman. Follow Dr. John on Instagram at The Evolved Caveman, all one word, or join the email list by visiting guidetoself.com.